And good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Source as Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
I'm Scotty Hertz. Next on BBC... No, we're not actually BBC, are we? If you were listening 1 minute before the show, you thought you were getting the BBC, but instead you got us.
If we're working for the BBC, I'm owed some serious back pay.
Yeah. Maybe we should be their branch here, and then they can pay us.
Oh, we'll
have to
sure.
work on the accents, I guess, yeah. maybe, but... Do that in private, I suppose, eh?
Whatever.
Next on Open Sources.
Next on Open Sources, which is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today... It's one more trip to Trump land before the end of the year, as the 45th president's entire personal and public enterprise is currently under 17 different investigations. And that's not all. And we'll try to get all of it in a tight 13, 14 minutes.
Super compressed.
And then we will welcome into the studio for the first time Ward 2 City Councilor Rodrigo Galler. And we will catch up on a very busy couple of weeks at City Hall here in Guelph. But first... Doug Ford, who is no stranger to scandal himself, and seems to can't stop creating it. It was one of those weeks. Today the back to work legislation for the Ontario Hydro workers was
OPG,
the Ontario Power Generators, was passed pretty much along party lines. That quote-unquote crisis is quote-unquote averted.
Such fear in the air. It's, oh my God, everything, the lights are all going to go out. Probably wouldn't have happened.
I was waiting for our labor activists to step in on this one.
Yeah, that's right. I always kind of hang that hat outside when we do this gig. But it bleeds in though, doesn't it? You know, you can't do that sort of thing, but... the majority, as you said, it went the way it was expected, I suppose, although some Liberals and Mike Schreiner actually voted for sending the OPG people back to work, from what I heard just before showtime there. And I also heard that Doug Ford wasn't in the legislature. Where's Doug?
Yeah, he's missed question period the last 3 days.
Where has he been? Is he already at the cottage? Because, you know, it was such an emergency that they had to get back and do this.
I think he was
there
for the vote, but he isn't there for question period, which is kind of the most public part of the legislature.
So the first time they cut it this close to Christmas since
1869, according to Cynthia Mulligan.
It's such an emergency, but Doug was busy, so he couldn't make it.
On Tuesday, he was also at the Amazon announcement, or the Amazon opening, the opening of a new office for Amazon.
Far which more important
I think
than
was in North Toronto. Well, I mean, there was something interesting that came out of that, where he said, like, we're cutting out 50 layers of bureaucracy. They can just call me on the phone, or my minister's on my phone.
Is he giving out his cell phone number again?
That may sound like super engaging, like to cut the red tape and cut the bureaucracy, but like, do we really want a $1 trillion corporation to have the leader of the province and his cabinet on speed dial? Does that seem okay to everyone out there?
No, I mean, there should be a set of channels to go through, and that isn't one of them. And I don't know. I'd like to get his mobile or cell number to call it just to see what happens.
Well, that's the other sort of one of the other scandals is he's giving no year-end interviews to any press outlet. People have been asking, but he's only giving news to one outlet. Guess which one it is?
Does it rhyme with the not rhyme with? Is it the Toronto Sun by any chance? Or?
No, not even the Sun. It's Ontario News Now,
which isn't a real news outlet.
No, it isn't.
So
trust me,
he's giving one interview to his media office.
Listen, I got a chance to see Ontario News Now in action.
Oh, how was that?
I wasn't there to watch Ontario News Now. I went to Kitchener for the announcement of the two whole extra trains.
25% more. Now with 25% more trains.
That was bizarre. We're increasing the amount of trains by 25%.
Yeah, got to get up at 4:30 to take it. Mm. Yeah.
But to watch Ontario News Now work, basically, I can't remember her name, who's like the quote unquote reporter, but
so memorable.
She like interviewed all the people before the event began, and then took off while the cameraman like filmed the actual announcement, which was kind of insightful.
They run a tight ship. I mean,
well, they run a tight ship, but you know, it's all about the access, right? But
they are the ship.
We're getting off topic.
It's sort of on topic, though, because this is how they roll.
Like, right. No.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, there's a lot to jam in. So,
right. The other thing is Tavner, Ron Tavner, who was supposed to be sworn in as the new OPP commissioner this week. On Sunday, I believe, he revoked his resignation to the Toronto Police Service, which says, which signifies maybe his...
Signifies he's done, probably, that this is over. Maybe not.
Well, it's not over because there's an integrity commissioner investigation.
Yes.
But perhaps it's an anticipation, or perhaps he just wants to keep a paycheck going. he needs to get through Christmas.
That's it. It's probably something to do with pensionable earnings, right? Right. It's like, oh, if I pull this now, I won't be able to get the full shot. There'll be a
like
gap.
That.
There'll be a record of employment time.
But there were a couple of wrinkles to this week, including the revelation that what the NDP is calling the personal pleasure wagon.
Oh, yeah. The tricked out bus or something.
Which,
from the cops,
Doug Ford supposedly needs to do work while he's on the road, that they wanted to keep off the books. That's also a part of this. But another part of this was dug up.
Spying on people? Like, what?
Well, another part of this was dug up by the NDP filing an access to information request. That Doug Ford had a meeting with Tavner and Toronto Police Chief Matt Saunders back in July, 5 days after Doug Ford had a meeting with the then OPP commissioner, Vince Hawks. And then in September, Vince Hawks announced he's resigning, and then the job is posted for OPP commissioner, and then 2 days after that, refined to lower the requirements in terms of rank and position that you have to be in order to apply. And voila, we have Ron Tavner as the OPP commissioner.
Funny that, eh? And did the list of meetings happen to list where they met? Some Swiss restaurant?
It was some Italian restaurant.
$300 bottles of vino, kind of place. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's mind blowing, but it is one of those things where it's like, how can you say with a straight face that you're not influencing this, or at least trying to put forward something? Like, it all seems to line up, allegedly, at this point, that there's been some, we'll call it, I wouldn't say influence peddling, but more like political interference in this, and in particular things such as lowering the bar. And then it just so happens that this personal family friend, like, it's a hell of a coincidence.
If it is a coincidence,
it's like, oh, well, he's the top guy. And, oh, I didn't have anything to do with it. I had absolutely nothing to do with it. I think if they do a bit more sniffing around with access to information in the paper trail, it will become quite clear.
Well, it smelled bad already when they 2 days after they post the job and it says deputy chief or, deputy commissioner or higher. And then
that's all reduced.
It goes back to erase those two so that it opened it up to...
Are you a beat cop with a good sense of whatever? You can...
did you used to drive my brother home when he was too wasted?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So, I mean, that looked bad alone.
People,
but to have like Godfather-style meeting at an Italian restaurant with you and the Toronto police chief and your
and
buddy...
A mandolin.
Your buddy, the TPS superintendent from your area, and then for that to come a couple of days after, you have this other meeting with the current OPP commissioner who resigns back in September. I don't think there's any expectation of that. I'd have to go back to, was his time up, maybe, or he always planning retirement? I don't know, but I mean, that's
more
sort of the unanswered question.
That's what the press release will say. More time with the family.
When an Ontario police commissioner retires, nobody thinks, like, is he, like, trying to get out of the way so the premier can appoint his crony as the new OPP? I mean, it's like we're living the Ontario version, because that was the thing about Trump, where I was like, I can't believe someone actually did this, and because things were down in the books as norms, not rules, so they weren't etched in stone.
And not to be ageist at all, but yeah. Normally... a cop that's been in the service for that many years, who is 72 years old, is generally looking at, like, Muskoka in terms of, like, the next step, you know, up to the cottage or whatever. Not
some cops aren't in the you know, the rank and file. Yeah, when they're 72.
So
come on.
I'm sure his pension is probably decent. It a lot of that doesn't make sense. But I guess that's an ongoing story. With the time we have remaining, should we talk about the cuts?
Yeah,
talk about the cuts.
Yeah,
I think we both have tons of
talk
notes
about the
on
cuts.
The cuts.
Yeah, yeah.
Which cut should we start with? Oh, the Friday afternoon email was very interesting. So Friday at 5, after school shut and everybody's gone home for the weekend, presumably, except for the people that are staying late to do marking or detention, an email dropped that $25 million was being cut
for hockey practice.
Yeah, at St. Mike's. Yes. Oh, that's a private school. I don't know if this money involves them. Cuts to class tutors. What was the name of the fund called? It was something Educational Programs Other,
right?
Which still seems to be a $400 million program, but they've chopped off certain. I think it was like a job creation program for some students in Toronto who were, I guess, racialized, indigenous, and maybe in communities that were...
yeah, in like vulnerable communities.
Yes, vulnerable communities. Yeah, let's cut that funding. So.
Yeah, so yeah, those... it wasn't just...
Said it was being mismanaged, right? Or wasted. There was something like...
Whereas, I mean, some people's definition of wasted is we're giving money to people who, you know, are disadvantaged and trying to give them a leg up. You know, so that's...
But the problem is that they said this with no... They didn't say in what way it's being mismanaged. They just said, it's being mismanaged. So that tars everybody that's dealing with this fund or the allocation of this money.
Except everyone in education came out and said this money is actually helpful. Because it wasn't just about helping youth find jobs. It was about after-school programs, which, you know, it's never enough with after-school programs. And it was also about this grant that, you know, I can't remember the name of it, but there was this grant available where if you saw a need in your neighborhood – and you were looking for like funds, startup funds to sort of address a community need in your area, you could go through this grant, and that's gone too. So it wasn't just, you know, it was about making the lives of the youth better. It was making them more responsible. It was making them more proactive, whether that's working, whether it's being a community activist or what have you. And now that money's gone. And it seems to be all in the, well, you know what? We're going to look at all the programs.
This is the line by line stuff. Yeah. And another one of the lines is the College of Midwives.
Yeah.
Have been funded by the provincial government for, I think they said something like 25 years. Not only was the cash cut. And this is where, to me, it gets a bit petty. The cut was retroactive to last April. So you're essentially saying to this organization, not only are we cutting your funding, it's backdated to a date where you would have had no idea that the cut was coming, to the tune of, what, 6 months, 8 months? Mm-hmm. That's a bit low, in my opinion. I mean, they can rationalize it however they want. I don't know if I didn't hear anything about this money being mismanaged or whatever. It's just... they said it was part of their, quote, transformational change of the healthcare system.
Oh, it's transformational.
I think when the College of Midwives came online and was getting this funding 25 years ago, that was transformational because they're fairly critical in lots of areas, doing duties that, you know, that don't need to be dedicated to the regular channel of the healthcare system, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then there was the Arts Council cuts as well, right? Was it $5 million? Mm-hmm. And again, what was it? I think it was two different quantities there. One was also Indigenous Culture Fund. It was created as a direct result of the Truth and Reconciliation Committee.
Right. And actually, funding is sapped.
Yeah. It's just gone. Because we, you know, line by line.
And having been the chair of a local arts organization, there's always...
money, isn't it?
Yeah. There's always a need for more money. Mm. There's always more groups looking for money. You really have to be sort of like a AAA organization to even get an increase. let alone sort of maybe hold on to the funding you do. I mean, this is...
Do you think this is part of that philosophical, the art shouldn't be funded by public money
thing? I don't know what philosophy it is. It's...
Because there is that.
Because I mean, it's so hard for the arts as it is. Like, yeah. Arts is always at the bottom of sort of the list, right above journalism, of
pretty much, yeah.
of people's charitable giving. Obviously, it goes to people who are hungry, people who need a warm bed, people who need life-saving surgery. And as soon as we get all the people with like life or death situations, then yeah. We'll start looking at the. Actually, no. Above that, there's kids and schools fundraising and trying to get money for textbooks and all that. And then we're going to look at the arts, then to I guess the last thing we'll talk about is the numbers have come back on the fortheparents.ca survey about sex ed.
Oh, yeah.
And 24 people appreciate what the Ford government has done. Everyone else wants the old curriculum, meaning the 2015 curriculum, back. Of course, Doug Ford says certain groups skewered the results. And, of course, as pointed out on Twitter, certain groups is code for... Well, let's just say the gays.
Gays, at least in Jews, Doug Ford's lefties, whoever, right?
Yeah. Well, whoever. Yeah. It's
NDP people.
NDP people. Yeah. But, it's so silly. This was like the inevitable result of sort of blowing up in their face. Like, we're going to do this big, wide, sweeping consultation.
And when we don't like it, we're just going to ignore it, right?
Well, I don't know.
But hey, gas is cheap, man.
I don't know if they live in their own bubble or they live in like the bubble that Tanya Greg Allen built.
It's like a sub bubble within a bubble. You know, one of those bubble blowers that blow.
It was always going to come back this way, though. Yeah. But they thought they were going to get like a different result. There's this, the vast silent majority, to borrow an appropriately Nixonian phrase, that we're going to, once they got this anonymous line, like, oh, I hate that new curriculum and the telling the kids about consent and teaching our 5-year-olds to have anal sex or whatever, like Jeff's head is going on. The
local reference.
Local reference. But it's, no, people understand the need for this. People understand that you can't go to a curriculum that's almost 25 years old. When there were no cell phones and no internet
somewhere.
And, when gay, and homosexuality was still, more or less like a social taboo. It the world has changed so much in 25 years, and people appreciate that, even if, the conservative government doesn't.
Yes. And we'll say more on that, much more on that.
Okay.
Probably weekly for the next 3 years.
No. Oh, my goodness. Action-packed. I can see it now.
Yeah.
Speaking of weekly disasters.
daily disasters.
Daily disasters. So down in the United States, they have until tomorrow to pass either a new budget, which seems unlikely, or just a continuing resolution to continue funding the government. There was a deal reached last night. The Senate passed a bipartisan bill to continue funding the U.S. government through till February. As you may recall, it was last week that Donald Trump said to Chuck Schumer, who's the Senate Minority Leader, Democratic Minority Leader, that he was going to let the government shut down if he didn't get his $5 billion for his border wall, and it was going to be his fault, and he was okay with it being his fault.
It was his fault the last time.
And then Donald Trump seemed to revoke his threat, and this thing passed the Senate last night. But now Donald Trump has threatened to veto the continuing resolution unless he doesn't get his border wall funding. And there has also been an accompanying revolt in the ranks of the Republican-held House, which is still Republican-held for a couple of weeks. Which they're trying to whip through this new budget that's going to have $5 billion for the funding. The wall, which is definitely not going to pass the Senate. Hmm. So the U.S. government could still shut down tomorrow night, which would be the third time this year.
Unbelievable. I thought Mexico was paying for the wall. What happened there? Something happened.
We should get Kellyanne Conway on the phone. She'll tell us.
Get her to explain it. I heard something about Kellyanne Conway. It was like you've been Kellied. There's like a word that they use for her style of, it's not even really rhetoric, is it? But then there's her. But then there's
rhetoric
John
implies
Calvin.
There's like some kind of point. Like you have some kind of goal.
Conway. I think it was Conway.
Conway. I like Conway, that. Where it's, I like
she,
that.
She, her skill is actually quite amazing in dancing around stuff.
She survived in the Trump White House for almost 2 years. I've never seen a bad tweet. Like he's never like crap tweeted her. She's carrying water like I'll say it. She's carrying water like a trooper.
And considering how many people have gone down in flames, and a lot of that has come to a head this week.
Yeah.
I saw a comment by Rudy Giuliani. He was talking about about Trump's lies. So he's kind of admitting that Trump is lying. But he said, well, he hasn't really lied under oath. And he's the busiest man in the world, so his memory is is kind of foggy.
I don't think he had one scheduled public event yesterday, Donald Trump.
Yeah, there were lots of tweets. There was tons of tweets yesterday. We both follow him, obviously. I don't follow him super closely, but when something's happening, if they say Trump tweeted this. Actually, Donald Trump's comedy account is following me. Like the fake, it said Donald J. Trump is following you, and I was like, "Oh my god!" And I was like, "Oh no!" It was actually a fake comedy account that's also quite.
Those
busy.
Are so tricky because you have to like make sure you read the entire handle.
As soon as you use hashtag U.S. politics, I think you end up.
Oh, maybe
I should stop using the hashtag. I know it's kind of funny though, but Trump being the.
It's funny who you pick up on Twitter.
It's like hashtag sad, but so much going on. Who should we start with? Michael Cohen, the rat, as Trump called him. The rat knows Michael Cohen. He's a lawyer. Well, he should know the law.
Well, I mean, he's going to jail. I think there were a couple of interesting things this week. First of all, it was Michael Flynn, who was supposed to be sentenced on Tuesday. But then the judge comes out and says, I'm not entirely sure you shouldn't be tried for treason, which is like,
hold on a minute.
It caught so many people aghast, but I was actually relieved that there was somebody in an official position in the United States who was as angry as I am watching this unfold.
Well, because there's a parallel story to it, and some of his associates were charged with conspiracy, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if that didn't, like, what was it? They were trying to, it was the strange Turkish lobbying case where they're trying to influence.
Right.
But they're associates of Flynn. I don't know if that sort of sent everything over the top saying, oh, Flynn is part of this as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that, so is, was his sentence delayed to see if he'll roll? Like, do you think they put that off till, they put it off till January, right?
I think they put it off till later than that. I think it's in March.
Forward into the future to see if he'll.
Well, he's met with the special prosecutor 19 times, and I think and Mueller's and his team recommended no jail time because of his cooperation, which means he must have like handed over some good stuff.
This is going to be quite the report.
Yeah. Well, presuming
I guess the race against time is on to get it out.
Well, I mean, at this point, well, you have to look at it this way. There's extreme doubt of whether or not Matthew Whitaker, the current AG, has any authority at all because he was not appointed by the Senate. He was the former Attorney General's chief of staff, right. And he's in a temporary position. He has no real power. Plus, there's this idea that he probably should recuse himself too, considering some of his public comments. And then you have this new AG, Bill Barr, who's coming in, who's also made equally preposterous comments about the Mueller investigation, including this year writing a 20-page memo about why it should be disbanded. So he has to be Senate confirmed.
Was a single space nominee?
I don't know what the format was.
Yeah.
Then you have a new Interior Secretary who has to be confirmed. You have a new UN ambassador who has to be confirmed. Just down and down the line, there's going to be like this traffic jam in January when the new Senate convenes and has to hear all these confirmation hearings for all these people. And then in the meantime, the work has to go on. The Democrats are taking over the House, and people are predicting that there's going to be a flurry of subpoena activity.
Oh, yeah.
Up to and including the tax returns, which has always been a sensitive subject. There's definitely going to be some stuff that's tested. In the meantime, Mick Mulvaney, who's going to be working three jobs, which each should be full-time jobs in their own right in the White House, he's going to take over for chief of staff for John Kelly. An interesting development came up this week where somebody noted that he was Senate confirmed as the White House budget director, which means now that he's going to be White House chief of staff, mm-hmm. he can be subpoenaed to appear before Congress as the White House chief of staff. Typically, that's not a thing that happens because the chief of staff isn't Senate appointed. So that's kind of a danger sign to Trump. I mean, yeah, he could try and shirk the subpoena, but I mean, that's going to be another legal slap fight.
And you've been mentioning John Kelly. He's someone who hung on for quite a while, considering the state of the White House. I think it was something like 17 months.
Yeah. Well, of course, that's because...
But he got sidelined early on. It's actually mentioned in Bob Woodward's Fear about how John Kelly started off as like, oh, I think I can handle this guy.
Right.
And of course, as everybody... It sounds like everybody hits this point in the White House where they realize that they can't handle this guy.
Yeah.
That he's just that out of control.
Yeah. Well, the thing with John Kelly is that apparently... Donald Trump had John Kelly do the firing because Donald Trump is a coward who can't even do his signature catchphrase when it's the real thing.
Or do it on Twitter.
And of course,
on a Friday at 5 o'clock. Yeah.
Right. And of course, you know, John Kelly's not going to fire himself. So John Kelly's able to slink around the White House for an extra couple of months, sort of in relative immunity. I do want to bring this up because it's like fairly important because we had... developments that the administration is removing sanctions against three companies owned by Ole Deripaska, who is a Russian oligarch who is in the pocket, as most of the oligarchs are, because they owe their power to Putin. He was also a client of Paul Manafort, who was also
gone down in flames as well.
Has been convicted and has also been found to have lied to the face of the special prosecutor. And this is in the midst of Trump announcing yesterday that he's going to pull all the U.S. troops out of Syria, which caught absolutely everyone from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who this is kind of their backyard, to people at the Pentagon, and of course, who benefits from the U.S. pulling out of Syria, Russia. So, like, there's all this Russia stuff happening, and Trump posted on Twitter this morning, like, oh, Russia isn't happy with this. And this comes, like, almost literally a couple of minutes after Putin's at his own press conference in Russia going, oh, yeah, I'm pretty happy this is happening.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not necessarily unhappy. It was something like that.
I mean, as a vampire, I can't feel pleasure, but if I could, this would certainly stimulate pleasure in my mind.
That's exactly it.
But in the meantime, 27 Republicans... 70% of Trump supporters say he hasn't been truthful about the Russia investigation. Now, whether that's just like he hasn't told the explanation yet, but we still have faith, or that is like we have serious concerns now. That wasn't exactly gone into the details, but like it's falling out from underneath him now.
Yes.
And as I said at the beginning, 17 investigations, everything he has touched in private business, in charity, in public life.
The collapse of the Trump Foundation, which affects the whole family, right?
The Trump Organization, Trump Foundation, the presidential campaign, the transfer of power committee. I can't remember its name. But that committee, the White House, it's all
and
under investigation.
Everybody who has ever sat down with Mueller, pretty much.
Anyone who's ever like met Donald Trump in the last 10 years, pretty much. It's
anyone who's said his name is going down.
Anyone who's thought his name.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're done.
He and his children, because you mentioned the foundation.
Yeah, they were named. The kids
they
were named
are barred
in the lawsuit.
From serving on any charity board.
Yeah.
Barred. The president of the United States and his three eldest kids are barred from serving on the board of directors of a charity. Come on. And now what people are saying too is that once he leaves the White House, he can be indicted. So, like, he might be leaving the White House in handcuffs.
Door frame. So, I'm never going to leave here.
So, 2019 is going to be interesting. In other words, okay,
right
we're going
out of the gate. Absolutely,
we're going to leave that there. Take a break, and we're going to come right back with our special guest of the week, which is Ward 2 City Councilor Rodrigo Guller. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. There, the air a little clearer, and the water held the sunset like the lake was heaven's mirror, and the loons would call through silence, summoning dreams away, pale ghosts retreating in the dimming of the day.
band from 1995. That was the band Tamarack. The album is Leaving Invergarden. Sadly, that was the voice of Molly Kvernick, who we lost yesterday. Molly, well-known musician in town, well-known at the station here. And her partner Harry's still in the hospital. We wish him mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the saddest news you can expect. Don't really have much to say about that. It's obviously a terrible situation, but mm-hmm. Molly will be missed, absolutely.
Yeah, long tendrils into the musical community here, even here at the station, of course, being, you know, CFRU being a community radio station, playing local music, a lot mm-hmm. of local musicians.
Yeah, we played Tamarack before a lot, so mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. covering all points, all so, things Canadian, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very sad news. Mm-hmm. Well, I hate to use that as a segue. Yeah. But we are sitting here today with Rodrigo Galler, who is Ward 2 City Councilor, newly minted Ward 2 City Councilor. Rodrigo, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us today.
Well, it's good to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Why don't you begin just telling us, you know, you've had a chance to sit on council. You just the third sort of official meeting. This past Monday, you seem to be getting a feel for it. Just speaking as someone who observes, you're sort of right out there in the deep end with your own motions and your own making your own waves. So, how do you feel after getting a couple of meetings under your belt?
I feel like I've got a lot to learn. I've got the official plan of the city in my bedside table, and it's a lot to read. I got today the 2019 proposed budget, so mm-hmm. that's my holiday reading. It's great being but having the opportunity to actually influence what's happening in the city and how it's going to be shaped. I am very grateful to all the people in Ward 2 that gave me their confidence. And over the past couple of weeks, it's been the first couple of council meetings for me. I think it's amazing to see the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes. Mm. I think the clerk's office and the rest of the staff at City Hall do a lot of work, and I'm very grateful. And I've had endless questions about everything because I had the impression of what it was like as a frontline employee and then as a community member. Mm-hmm. But now being on the side of council and actually going through all of the reports that we have, all of the submissions from the community members, I am amazed by the amount of people that want to participate and want to get involved and want to have a say in how their communities run. Mm-hmm. And it is that balance of listening to all the people that come as delegations and then also keeping in mind all the other people that I've met during my campaign that gave me their priorities, that told me what they wanted to see, but they may not necessarily make it out on this one occasion. Mm. And, you know, nearly every issue that is coming to council will impact people in one way or another. So right. I think it's a tough balance that I've been having to make between what I'm hearing from the people that stand up at the podium and advocate for something strongly, and then what the rest of the community would benefit from or what they would like to see.
And it's, you know, right out of the box, something in your own backyard, the Speedvale underpass. And I imagine there were a lot of strong feelings about that. And this is, you know, it's a neighborhood thing. Mm-hmm. It's in your ward. But this is also something that a lot of people in the city have their eye on because a lot of people want that active transportation trail. And I imagine you heard a lot about that because certainly 50 correspondences, 8 delegates at that meeting is, you know, that's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot of considering, a lot of work. I met with the senior management in charge of that project beforehand, along with my Ward 2 mate counselor, James Gordon, and we worked with community members and with staff to come up with a couple of motions that mm-hmm. would address the challenges that the bridge was facing, mainly that our zoning bylaw did not allow for the bridge to be built in the way that council directed it. And mm-hmm. then we worked through the wording, what motion would make it possible to do, and then with the help of staff, we were able to bring forward something that addressed what the community's concern was. Mm-hmm. Previously, the way that that council had given the direction, the only viable way was to put a path on top of the retaining wall along the river. But, I mean, that retaining wall could be up there for a long time. So it would mean that we would not be seeing that that connection happening for the next, you know, 10, 20 years. However, right. we're able to work through and give staff appropriate direction. So hopefully we'll be seeing that that trail connection be done in the next 4 or 5 years. So it's nothing is immediate with municipalities. That is something that that is unfortunate. But it's one of the safeguards that we have. Due diligence, take your time, make sure it's done well, and then build something that's going to last for the next 100 years.
It's interesting because, you know, the fact that you're new, it's a new council. Mm-hmm. This is a major thing.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not just sort of you working alone, of course. You're working with James, and, you have to sort of trying to craft these motions. You're not only learning the functioning of council, you're learning the language, the lingo, the plans, and, you know, to come up with your own sort of proposals in the midst of all this. Mm-hmm. You know, can you talk a bit about, you know, working with James and, you know, how you know you're able to... I mean, even for somebody like me who's there every week, it's sometimes hard to wrap your head around
Absolutely.
This stuff. It's deeply encoded in legalese.
Absolutely. I mean, we started with the community. We'd met with the folks that had very strong feelings about it. They wanted to see this move forward. We had a couple of meetings with people to really understand what their priorities are and how they would like the city to move forward with this, keeping in mind that, you know, that's 50 people that, you know, took the time to write in, but the path is going to impact hundreds, if not thousands, of people across the city. So we listened to them, and then we actually said, city staff, how can we make this work? Mm-hmm. You know, help us out here. And then we worked with staff to make sure that we were given the right direction, because we are not, you know, experts, engineers, or planners, or, you know, right. any of these things. I'm really good at listening to people, talking to people, condensing information, and then we have to rely on the expertise at city staff to make sure that we make motions that make sense and mm-hmm. that are implementable and that will give us the results that we want. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of collaboration between the community members and us, James and myself. I found James quite good to work with, and I'm looking forward to continuing to work with him over the next 4 years. And then with the city departments, just getting a hold of everything that everyone does, making sure that we're talking to the right people. And then with that work, with that collaboration between a lot of people, bringing forward the motions that thankfully was passed unanimously by the rest of council. So we'll be seeing that connection be made shortly after the bridge reconstruction is completed. Mm-hmm. We're very happy that as one of the first motion that I worked with James on, and we brought it forward and it passed. So it's a pretty good start.
Coming out the other side of that, what was, you know, you talked a lot about hearing from people mm-hmm. beforehand. What have you heard since?
I have heard some disappointment mm-hmm. that it will take that, you know, 5-6 years to make.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people were really keen on having it built concurrently with the Speedville Bridge reconstruction.
Right.
Budgets being what they are, we also have to keep in mind that the city has to spend on a lot of different things, and moving forward, a project. It's just not possible at the risk of you know, cutting services elsewhere. So especially large projects like this, we will be putting it forward in the next budget. And that is actually one of the neat things that the city is doing. They're moving forward from having annual budgets to mm-hmm. having budgets for every 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that really shows the maturity of the city, that we mm-hmm. have the foresight to plan ahead. And, you know, a lot of credit to the finance team and to the senior team at the city to be able to make that shift from mm-hmm. spending a lot of time. And being a frontline employee, that's something that I would also see my supervisors and my managers spend a lot of time, you know, figuring out the budget for next year. What do we need? Mm-hmm. But now I'm really excited that they're going to take that all of that work, which was significant, and only mm-hmm. have to do it once every 4 years, which I think it's great.
I'll put in a plug here that I did a podcast with Tara Baker mm-hmm. last year about like sort of step by step how the budget comes together. Mm-hmm. And it is a year long activity from when they pass the budget and then having like a debrief about how that budget went and then starting the process all over again with like by June, you know, sort of having the numbers on the board. The idea of planning 4 years at a time somehow seems more daunting. But as you said, that this is sort of it's one of the things that's sort of keeping our credit rating from going higher is that if we need that longer term budgetary vision, that that sort of might help us on that side with S&P.
Absolutely. And when we're talking about big capital projects, the construction of the South End Rec Center, things like that, I think one of the challenges of just doing things 1 year at a time is that suddenly you're putting a lot of money into one pool in 1 year. But if you have the long-term view, then you really can do a lot more together and have a stronger vision that actually gets followed through. So that is great.
I want to talk about the other big issue from Monday, which is the opt-in for cannabis retail. I was sort of struck by something Dan Gibson said, which is that, it felt like it was in the middle of the debate. Council realized that the full measure of what was being debated, that this wasn't a theoretical exercise, that come April, somebody is going to open a cannabis retailer. Did you feel that too, that maybe over the course of the meeting that, I mean, I know that your fellow new counselor, Dominique O'Rourke, was keep it a pro-con list. Mm-hmm. But, where was your head at during that meeting?
I was really trying to figure out what would be best for the community on the long term. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, we have the medical officer telling us that, she's against this happening in Guelph. On the other hand, we have a lot of community members that have contacted us mm-hmm. and spoken to us during the campaign, letting us know that, they want to have this in the community or that they want to open a business that's related to cannabis. And we look at the results of the survey. So I'm balancing this, saying, okay, 60% of the city on the survey said they want to have Guelph opt-in. Mm-hmm. And then we have these other issues. And I was actually grateful for all of the in-depth work that other counselors had been putting in. Councillor Salisbury had done a lot of work and research into mm-hmm. how other municipalities were doing. Councillor Ault had done a lot of work and spoke about it. And I was really taking a lot of time and just taking it in, figuring mm-hmm. out I wasn't sure which way I was going to go because cannabis is legal, so we can't do anything to put it back in the box. And that is a decision was made by the federal level, and then the provincial level told us this is how it's going to happen in Guelph. So really, we have a very small opportunity to manage something. And I think that we made the right choice given the circumstance that we were given. I think that we don't want to short Guelph the opportunity to encourage community members to, travel to another city to do their cannabis procurement. and I am hopeful that the province will listen when we give them advice on where the location of this shop is. I'm not sure that we will see, multiple stores. There is a limit of 25 stores across Ontario.
Right.
I'm not sure where we will rank amongst that, given that that we'll have to see which other places opt in, how big they are. I imagine that the large urban centers will be getting the stores first.
Right.
So we'll have to see. And it's really hard to make decisions as well with the provincial level shifting so much. We keep on hearing that news coming up every other week about how they're changing the regulations. So I'm really not holding my breath that it's going to be the same come April. Right. We may have a different reality by then.
It's interesting because Guelph was one of the places I was going to get an OCS store.
I was so looking forward to that. I really think that.
Oh, really?
absolutely. Absolutely. I think that it should be a government-controlled situation, just like the LCBO. I really think that the revenue from the sale of you know, cannabis and alcohol should go to back to the community so we can pay for things. However, the province said we're going to go the private route, and I heard from a lot of community members that were actually happy about that because they're looking to enter that business.
Right.
So that's where we're at, and we'll have to see what happens.
Well, we're going to anyway. I wanted to ask you about one more thing, which is that actually at the last week's meeting, you were the lone vote against accepting the application about that big development at White Law and Paisley,
yes.
Which was pretty bold because you usually don't vote against accepting applications. Yes. And I want to know your thinking behind that.
Yeah, absolutely. That was actually my first full council meeting, and the application came up, and it really struck me that they were asking for a lot of variances to our zoning bylaw to reduce the size that, you know, we have directions on how much parking space, how much amenity space, the space between buildings. And in this application, pretty much every one of those guidelines that we had put down, they had said, well, let's give them less yard space. Let's give them less communal space. Let's give them less parking spaces. And just coming fresh off the campaign, I'm hearing from a lot of people that live on the periphery of town, and they're having a really hard time because they live in townhouses or on streets where there's not enough parking in particular for them to park their own cars, let alone have guests or over the holidays have family members come in. And then we have an application that's telling us we're going to have less than one parking space per community member, and it's on the periphery of town, so people are going to be driving in and out. They're likely going to be even working outside of Guelph, given our low unemployment rate. We attract people that work in other places. And I think it would create an impossible situation. Now, I knew that the motion was going to go through because I have seen how those planning council meetings go. But I just wanted to send a message that it's not acceptable to have all of those the reductions on the space for people to live. I mean, yes, we do want to have higher density builds in the city. We want to densify, especially in the nodes like the Paisley and Imperial area. But we really cannot do it at the cost of the quality of life of the people that would live there and also of their neighbors. Because particularly with parking, overflow parking impacts people 2, 3, 4 blocks down the street. And I think that it's important to keep that in check.
Well, it was an interesting meeting to watch because you could sense the distaste for some of these. Now, I mean, it was kind of always there. But I think the election maybe gave some of your colleagues a kick that, you know, there really is a distaste for some of these high-density proposals. You voted no to send a message, and I wonder, do you have an expectation that that message will be received and that maybe the next application that comes forward?
I'm not going to hold my breath, but I hope I hope that we can move forward. Now, one of the other challenges that we face is that we have an official plan that was recently approved, and then we have a zoning bylaw that does not always match. So the planning department says allows applications to come in with amendments to the zoning bylaw because in places we have to actually update the zoning bylaw so it mirrors and allows for everything that the official plan wants. And we're going to be doing that review over the next 3 years. It's going to take quite a bit of time, but then we'll have two documents that actually speak to each other well. So I know that we need amendments, but I think that we need to send the message that we don't want to compromise on the quality of life of our community members, both the ones that live there and the ones that are going to be moving into the new developments.
Well, time flies, so we're running out of time. But in terms of, you know, what's coming up, like what are you eager to, you know, you talked about you're going to be reading the budget over the break, catching up on your reading. But, you know, in terms of the issues, what are you looking forward to digging into? Because, you know, I think there's about 10 meetings coming up in January that's going to cover the gamut. So what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward over the next few weeks to actually reach back out to the constituents. James and I are planning a number of town hall meetings in Ward 2 so we can engage people, really get them involved, and actually have people have a better understanding of the municipality, how it works, and how they can participate in the process. So my goal over the first 6 months is going to be really to dive in and understand how we do the budget process, because I still haven't read through that proposed budget, so I want to understand.
It came out like 3 hours ago, yes. So don't, yes. we won't beat yourself up too much.
and I want to get out there and talk to the community members, keep that conversation that I started during the campaign, and actually listen to people. So that is my goal over the next little bit. I know I've heard from other counselors that have a list of 11 things they want to work on. Mm. And I think that for me, I don't want to overpromise. Mm. I just want to make sure that I'm talking to people more. And one of my goals will be for the next election to have a greater voter turnout for Ward 2. We did have one of the lower voter turnouts in the city. And I think that we want to make sure that people are aware of everything the city's doing and how their participation or lack of participation could impact them both in their quality of life, their living, and in the taxes that they pay. So
not as low as Ward 4. Don't try and steal our thunder. I did want to just maybe wrap up. You promised or suggested that, mm-hmm. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you wanted to have like a town hall every 2 months. Is that still your intent?
Absolutely. We've got the dates for the first 6 months. Okay. So we have those planned. We're just waiting for the booking confirmations to come in. Okay. And looking forward to announcing them in the next few days, so over the holiday break.
Great.
And we'll be starting with the first one on January 12th. So we'll be sending out the invitations for that shortly.
Excellent. Well, we really appreciate your time. I mean, it's a very busy time of year. And, we hope to have many of these more conversations in the next 4 years to come.
Well, thank you for having me over. I look forward to that as well.
And if you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you, if they want to reach out, how can they do that?
Absolutely. If you go to guelph.ca, that's probably the easiest way. On the top bar, there is the city government and their city council. All the councillors' information for myself. You can also just go to rodrigogoller.com. That's my personal website, and you can look me up there. I look forward to hearing from people, any issues, any concerns. I'm always looking forward to meeting more of my constituents.
We'll see how long that lasts. I kid. Well, thanks again for stopping by. And that is the end of our show today and the end of our live shows for the year. The next 2 weeks are going to be our annual year-end specials. So next Thursday, December the 27th, that is our annual political movies show. And then on Thursday, January the 2nd in the year 2019.
Oh, my goodness.
That's our year-end award show.
The future.
It is the
calling.
Future.
Yes.
It'll be Blade Runner here next year.
Yeah.
2019 is Blade Runner year.
Feels like it already. Anyway.
Where's my flying car? Anyway, you can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. You can find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or go to @OS_Guelph on Twitter. You can also download this episode or any other episode of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I can be found at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or you can go to guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com. There's a rerun there right now. We're in reruns.
It's an old man Hertz classic.
Absolutely. And happy holidays to all, yes. Whatever your holidays may be.
Merry Christmas.
And be sure to tune into our pre-recorded specials because...
What else are you going to do? Yeah. It's a holiday break.
You're on holiday.
What are you going to do? Like, talk to your family? I don't think so.
After a couple of days that way. No, anyway. All right. We'll leave it at that. Eh?
Yeah, we'll leave that at Dad. DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will be back here pre-recorded next Thursday at 5 p.m., and we will see you then.